All right, it's a feedback. It's a feedback episode.
What?
It's a feedback. We got some feedback. We got some questions. We're going to answer them as best of our ability.
I'm excited.
First of all, this was not feedback, but I want to point everybody in the direction. There, our good friend Steve, listener, friend, he tagged us on Twitter. He posted a video of, remember we were talking about the Gin Blossoms last
of
week? He posted a video of him singing along at the concert. A while ago.
Wonderful.
A while ago. The Gin Blossoms are not playing it right now, I don't think. As far as I know.
No, probably not.
So go on our Twitter. You could just search for it. Steve tagged us.
They aren't playing the Herd Immunity Festival? Did you hear about that?
No, sorry.
That's a real thing, buddy.
Okay. This is not the Vanilla Ice one that he had to cancel, right?
No, in Wisconsin, they were having something that they titled the Herd Immunity Festival.
Anybody
they had to rename it. Static X?
Oh, well, Wisconsin Death Trip, so it makes sense.
Perfect, right?
We'll be talking about Static X.
We will.
On our Scream 3 episode.
They had to change the name, I guess, because maybe some folks were offended by the...
By the Herd Immunity Festival?
I wonder why. Kind of an odd time to be. But honestly, like, you know they did that for the...
Definitely, for the publicity.
For the publicity, yeah.
I think that might be why. Vanilla Ice was in the news for it, too.
Anyway, amazing.
Jonathan Street, though.
Yes.
Good friend Jonathan.
The person who told me about the Herd Immunity Festival.
Really?
Yeah, John told me about this. Yeah. He keeps me informed sometimes with these things.
Did he say who else was playing?
He sent a whole link about the show, I think.
Okay.
But I didn't see a full list, no.
So he wants to know, so with all the Stephen King movies and series that have come out and are in the works, is there anything that you guys would like to see made, whether it be a reboot or for the first time? So he's throwing in like the... like caveat that it could be a reboot as well. So not just a first time thing, because we have had a lot of Stephen King. We had a lot of Stephen King lately too.
Sure.
So what I did is I'm on the old Den of Geek. You familiar with Den of Geek?
Den of Geek, yes. I am.
And these fine folks over there have put together a helpful list of upcoming Stephen King movies and TV shows in development.
Okay.
So I don't keep up as well as I used to. And with all of the streaming now, I think everything is in development right now. I think anything,
all of his books, yes.
Well, I think just anything in general.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I don't think anything is in production right now. I think some of the bigger movies are finally starting to like resume production.
But... Right. So we're going to start at the top. We have Lisey's Story is in production. It's going to be the J.J. Abrams Apple TV. I bring this one up because I have read Lisey's Story, and it's Stephen King's favorite book that he's written, he says. It's kind of like a romantic story.
Mm-hmm.
I quite like it. It's kind of like a romantic fantasy. I quite liked it, actually. Have you ever read it?
No, I never read it. I've heard mixed things on it, but I don't know. What do I know? This is being developed as a TV series.
Apple Plus.
See, I think
produced by J.J. Abrams. Well, J.J. I actually think J.J. is a good match for this. And
okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
It's got some, I would say it's got some Lost vibes.
Okay.
In some ways.
Well, I always hesitate these days anytime somebody says we're going to make a series out of something. I always get nervous about that.
I don't. Yeah.
I get less nervous when they say it's like a limited series or a mini series. Something like maybe, what was the one that HBO just did?
Oh, The Outsider?
Yeah. Right. Something like that where they kind of come right out and say, like, this is a limited series. Like, I feel more excited about that than I do about taking something and stretching it out into... But, I mean, I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion on it, I guess, this one.
I've read the book. I like the book. I probably won't get Apple Plus unless I get it for a month. Maybe I'll watch it. Who knows?
Well, there's the other issue, right?
Yeah.
I'm not getting Apple Plus. So.
The Stand. This is the Josh Boone adaptation of The Stand, of course. Was this supposed to be out by now?
I don't know what the deal is with this, because I think they shot it.
Was Josh Boone, something by Josh Boone delayed?
I think they shot it already, right?
10-hour limited series. This was updated April 20th. It says but it finally went in front of the cameras last September as a 10-hour limited series at CBS All Access, the network subscription service.
Yeah, I think it's done shooting. I think they're probably doing post remotely would be my guess. This is a King property that makes sense as a series, right? Because there's no way you can do this book justice in a... And I'm not even the biggest Stan fan. I'll be straight up front with that.
I'm with you.
I think the concept is great. I think there's a lot of great characters in it. I think the ending sucks.
It does suck.
And I think that there is a chunk of that book after the initial, I think after book one, because the book is broken up into three books internally, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think book two is like miserably slow. Like they're like having like town council meetings for like a third of the book. And it's hard to talk about or to listen to or to read. So I don't know. But no, I've heard that, and this is with King's blessing is my understanding, that they've made some significant changes to the text. Okay. And including the ending. And I think that's because in novel form, that ending might be able to work, right? I mean, I don't love it, but I think it's more palatable in a book. In a film or a series, I think people would be like chucking remotes through the TV. Personally, if they stuck to the book.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, I'm excited for this one. Anytime you say James Marsden.
He is in this. Yeah,
and he's really a good call, I think, for Stu, right. Playing Stu. So it's got a great cast. I think Alexander Skarsgård is Randall Flagg, too.
I believe you are correct.
Which is pretty sweet. So
I will watch this because I always get CBS All Access while one of the Star Treks are on.
Yeah,
because
you watch what's the, is it Voyager?
Discovery and Picard.
Voyager's an older one.
Yeah, and Picard, and they are doing what I've always wanted them to do. They're doing a Captain Pike show from what I've read. And
oh, cool.
Pike is
Anson Mount.
He is so awesome as Captain Pike.
Yeah.
He's my favorite Captain Pike. Yeah.
That's sweet.
He's sweet.
There's been a few of them too. Greenwood played Captain
Greenwood
Pike.
Greenwood and the gentleman from the original series as well, who was around for the pilot, like that first pilot, kind of like they had like a test pilot in a way.
Yeah.
Where like Spock
that's
was
the
like
whole here. Story of yeah. Captain Pike, right?
Yes. And then he showed up in like a wheelchair later on. And he was like,
they explained why he had left the series.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and so I will watch that. The next couple are short stories, Bone Church, The Boogeyman. These are, yeah, one
the Boogeyman,
is from Night Shift, I think, is that one?
Yeah,
I read that
that's
one
of my favorite King short stories. The issue is, how do you make it a feature, right? Because it's really...
You've got to use it as a jumping off point. Yeah.
This has to be a kind of inspired by more so than an adaptation, I think.
This is Quiet Place writers, Scott Beck and Brian Woods, who might be a good call to do something like that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
to
I
take
would
something,
think so.
Yeah, to take a smaller concept like that and kind of blow it up.
That story is rough to read, though.
This is the children. Yeah, yeah, the kids one, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I don't know how they're going to pull it off, but I'm interested.
This is early King, right?
Yeah, it's dark. It's like, yeah.
Is that his first collection?
I believe Night Shift is his first short story collection, and arguably his best, I would say. I mean, I like most of them, but anyway, yeah. So I don't know the other one. The Bone, was it the Bone something?
Yeah, I don't know. That one's from Bizarre Bad Dreams.
Yeah,
another.
I've never read Bizarre Bad
either,
Dreams.
I think that's a novella collection or a short story. Yeah.
Okay, so whatever. Yeah.
Chapelwaite. Are you familiar with Chapelwaite?
No.
This is Adrian Brody is set to star in Chapelwaite, an intriguing period piece chronicling the origins of one of the author's signature horror novels, Salem's Lot.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, this is going to be on Epics, apparently. The series will center on Captain Charles Boone, a widower left to care for his three children at his family's ancestral home in the town of Preacher's Corners, the titular Chapelwaite, where he is forced to confront a hidden darkness that is. So this will be like just like a prequel.
I'm not going
to
watch it.
I probably won't watch it either, but it sounds interesting. Yeah. All right, the Dark Half. So this is this would be kind of a reimagining, reboot, whatever.
Right.
Or just another movie, another adaptation.
Right.
Because there was a Romero one back in like 91.
Yes.
What do you think? I read The Dark Half.
Do we have a director or anything for this thing? Just Dark Half?
Yeah, Alex Ross Perry, who wrote Her Smell, starring Elizabeth Ross.
Okay.
He did something else, too. Her Smell is... I watched it, actually, because it seemed like something right up my alley. It's very much a... but it's really... it's kind of out there...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time, it's really long, too.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird one for me to watch, knowing me just how much I bitch about length. But because it's like two and a half hours. Anyway.
That's a lot of movie for you, Tim.
It's a very interesting, especially visually, film, because it's shot through like kind of a dreamlike state.
Okay.
Because she's basically a drugged out rock star
okay.
in the movie, Elizabeth Moss. And she's... a very good performance. But anyway, he's an interesting choice for this. The Dark Half I have sitting on my I'm going to reread it. I haven't read it since I was like a teenager. Dark Half was one of the first King books I ever read.
It's a scary King book.
It's a good King book. I like
it. It's a cool book. And I like the Romero movie too. So, I'm down. I've not seen Her Smell. But it sounds to me like from some of the trippier qualities of that movie that maybe, hopefully the director will be able to infuse that a little bit into some of the trippy qualities of Dark Half. So, yeah.
Queen of Earth was the other one he did, which is another Elizabeth Moss movie. But yeah, okay. I think he's in a way a good fit. Have you ever read The Eyes of the Dragon?
So I have not.
Me neither.
That is my mother-in-law's favorite Stephen King book.
This has been on my list for a while. I just haven't got around to it.
Yeah, I have not. So I actually bought a copy for her that I'm going to borrow from her so I can read it. But I haven't, and I'd like to read it. I want to see. I love it when King mixes it up and does something a little different. Doesn't always succeed, but I dig it. So
yeah, it's more of a fantasy novel, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, I just finished The Talisman. There's one that I want to see made into probably a TV series. Probably a limited series would be. I think that would be how it worked best. Do a movie. You could do a movie too. From a Buick 8. This is the 2002 novel. This has been kicked around forever. So
yeah, I think I've seen that thing in various states of pre-production for ages.
Yeah, I don't see anybody attached. Oh, William, William Brent Bell, the boy.
Oh, okay. Now I'm on board. Let's go.
This one, move this one high up on the list because this is the Blumhouse Firestarter reboot. I think we are due for. I think Firestarter is one you can make a kick-ass movie about these days.
I think you make a kick-ass. I think it has potential for a series of films.
Right.
So, if somehow Blumhouse
was... Oof, never mind. I just saw the director, but continue.
I don't know. If somehow Blumhouse was able to, like, find a way... Because it seems like they can get away with anything at this point. To finagle their way into anything. If they could find a way to, like, get a few more King properties and make, like, a bit of a shared King universe, that'd be very cool.
Akiva Goldsman.
Oh, no. Why? Why?
I think he must.
He had to have been attached before. I bet you he's a leftover.
Akiva Goldsman does not seem like someone who will stick around. He seems like someone who will get it produced. Akiva Goldsman, you know what? I'll give him this much. He gets shit done.
Oh, no, he does. Like, he does. I really don't want to shit on Akiva Goldsman. Yeah. Honestly, I don't. I mean, I do not think he's...
He's got the Star Trek series back on.
Yeah?
Yeah, so...
No, he's... I think he's very good at shepherding the flock a lot of the time. You know what I'm saying?
And I think that Blumhouse style of like making a lower budget movie and kind of whittling it down to a couple ideas, I think is perfect for something like Firestarter.
Agreed.
And actually might like be good for Goldsman.
I just don't know if he can do that.
Right.
I'm not even sure. I think that I haven't seen Invisible Man yet. I know you saw it. We'll probably talk about that at some point.
But, yeah, we can talk about it in this bonus episode. I think,
but, you know, they're doing it. It sounds like they're going to be doing Wolfman as well. With Ryan Gosling, perhaps, and I think that's very cool because I think that the beauty and the benefit of the Blumhouse method, if you want to call it that, manages to actually I think bring back renewed interest in some of these properties, and I think Firestarter could be a perfect example of that. So yeah,
I don't know a lot about The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. The only reason I want to bring this up though is because it's being produced by Chris Romero, who is the former wife of George Romero.
Yes. Yes.
So this one's been kicked around for a while. They're talking about doing a Hearts in Atlantis, another Hearts in Atlantis, apparently.
Yeah, that's a weird situation because Hearts in Atlantis, the book, is a collection of stories. It's not a book. I think it's like a series of collection of novellas, I believe. And then the movie Hearts in Atlantis is only based on one of the stories in the book.
Right.
And it's not called Hearts in Atlantis. So it's very strange. So I don't know what that means when they say they're doing another Hearts in Atlantis. Are they remaking the story that was made into a movie? I don't know. We'll see.
The next one is The Institute. Bring this one. I just read The Institute, and it's a fun... I enjoyed it. It's a
fun... That was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a YA, young adult style book, which King has kind of been doing off and on. King's kind of been doing that forever.
So I'm saying, dude, get Blumhouse to do this movie, right? Bring Charlie McGee, I think was her name,
right,
from Firestarter, and bring Carrie in, man.
Right.
And have this, like...
Have us a shared universe?
Yes.
Did you watch the second season of Castle Rock?
I did not.
It's kind of sweet.
I've heard they kind of just go, screw it.
It's kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Like, at first, I was, like, skeptical during the second season, and then, like, some of the shared universe started happening, and, like, Eddie Wilkes is, like, fighting, like, body snatchers and shit, and I'm just like, this is cool.
So dumb that you kind of have to love it. Is that coming back anyway, Castle Rock?
I have no idea. I don't know. I have no idea what's coming back anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if we're going to go see movies again.
Right. But this is Mr. Mercedes team. David E. Kelly and Jack Bender. Jack Bender was Lost, too, right?
Yeah.
The Mr. Mercedes show, I watched the first couple episodes, and it was good.
Cool.
I don't know the jaunt. I'm not... That's Muschietti, I believe.
Okay.
That was...
He's busy with The Flash.
Joyland, I bring up because Danny, our friend Danny, loves Joyland.
I have a copy of Joyland.
The Long
Walk. There on the shelf.
Yeah.
I have not read it. But,
The Long Walk is a Bachman tale. They have been kicking that around forever.
Long Walk, yeah.
That's Darabont, right?
Yes. That is a brutal, brutal, brutal book. As most of Bachman's books are. The Bachman stuff is rough. I think I have those too, the Bachman books collected. I have not read all of them, but Long Walk is one of the better ones, I think. So,
are you excited for The Overlook? The J.J. Abrams prequel series, Overlook Hotel, that's kind of spinning out of The Shining.
Not particularly. Here's the thing. I think prequels are so hard to pull off because you know where the story eventually winds up, right? So you have to. There has to be a reason for why you're sharing with the audience what the story they're seeing. Because in a lot of ways, you tend to know the outcome. But when they take these movies or these stories and you go, oh, we're going to delve super deep into this aspect of the story, in this case, the hotel, right? I don't really need to know anymore about the Overlook Hotel. It's haunted by ghosts and spirits. Do I need to know? I'm not saying this won't work, but I guess for me, I've never felt a pull to need to know more about the Overlook.
Right.
I don't know. I'm
so satisfied with the Dr. Sleep Shining combo, like, right now. Like, do whatever, JJ.
Yeah.
Whatever makes you happy. The next one, though, I'm super excited for. Speaking of Dr. Sleep, this is the Mike Flanagan Revival. Revival is... it's my favorite late-era King book. Revival is one of my favorite King books. I adore Revival.
I need to read Revival. I have that one, too.
It's King doing... Yeah, it's King doing Mary Shelley.
Oh, yeah, that's totally at my alley. I've heard it's really, really, it's got some really great scares. It's got some really nasty horror stuff in it, I've heard. The book.
Yes.
And it's Flanagan, dude.
This is, out of all of these, this is the one I'm most excited
for. I need to read the book before this happens. Is this shot already, this movie?
No, they shot this thing? I think they were about to go into, signed up, yeah. They had just announced it, and then...
Ah.
Corona hit. Okay. Salem's Lot. This is the James Wan, Gary Dauberman, who wrote it. Yeah, sure. That sounds all right. I don't have much. Sleeping Beauties. This is the one he wrote with his son, mm-hmm. Owen King. I'm happy that they wrote a book together.
Okay.
I didn't think it was anything beyond that. Fair. Oh, and then The Talisman is the Stephen King and Peter Straub
collaboration. The first of the two, right? Oh. They do two. Black House was the second one.
Really, are you excited for The Tommyknockers by James Wan?
100%. I think so. Here's why.
I have owned the Tommyknockers for most of my life, and I don't think I've ever read it. It's just sat on my shelf, and it stares at
me. It kind of sucks. it's drugged out King, but it's all the worst drugged out King impulses and none of the good ones.
I believe I've started it and just never finished it.
It's too long. But I think as a concept, I think the Tommyknockers is kind of interesting. And I think that it could work in the right hands. So, Tommyknockers is one of those things when you announce you're going to remake it, right? I go, oh, cool. That makes sense. You can improve that. You can improve the original miniseries or the whatever it was. I think it was a miniseries. You can improve on that and improve on the book. So go for it.
Right.
Dreamcatcher is another one. Like, I think you could make a cool version of Dreamcatcher as long as you're not beholden to that book.
You and I need to do Dreamcatcher someday.
Ugh. I watch Dreamcatcher like once a year. It's weird.
The Duddits?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend like I don't enjoy Dreamcatcher every time I watch it.
Yeah, of course. Come on, dude. It's so stupid. what's his name? Damian Lewis.
Yeah.
he's doing some stuff in that movie.
Morgan Freeman's eyebrows.
Holy shit, yeah, they're fake. I think he requested those. So weird.
That movie is just maniacal, just crazy.
Can we do a double feature of Dreamcatcher and The Happening?
Of course.
Because that'd be a really good double feature, wouldn't it?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, good.
Please.
Perfect.
Okay, so thank you for that. I hope we covered everything.
Yeah.
I think.
I'd say Revival I'm most excited for.
Revival, yeah.
Yeah, purely because of Flanagan.
Right.
And your review of the book. So.
Dave Steele, Dave Smith, good friend, he wrote in asking, this is probably territory you've gone over. You want to know what some sort of entry-level horror stuff, kind of like gateway horror.
Yeah, his son has shown some interest in horror, yeah.
Yeah, he said he's watched the Creep Shows, the Gremlins, Beetlejuice, and Chucky Child's Play.
Yeah.
So he wanted to know, like, if we had any recommendations. I thought this might be a fun time to recommend. You have a child, and I know some of our listeners have childs.
Have childs.
So we want to see if we could scar some of them for life.
Yeah, yeah. How can we make that happen?
So I said stuff. So I'll just go over our list here. Monster House, I think, is a good one. Remember the old anime? That's kind of old now.
Yeah,
remember
Monster House? Yeah, in terms of animated stuff, Monster House would be a good pick, right?
Yeah.
Same with like Hotel Transylvania, things for the younger kids.
Those Burton ones, like Frank and Weenie. Even Nightmare Before Christmas, of course.
That's a fine choice. Yeah. Yep. If you're looking for animated stuff. It sounds funny, but even like Monsters, Inc. and stuff like that, right? Because you've got, if this is really early on and you're introducing your kids to the idea of monsters and scariness and stuff like that, these are perfect things. Scooby-Doo is another one that would be great to start with. Any of the shows.
I think Scooby-Doo.
It's kind of great, yes. great gateway horror. So that's an option too.
I haven't seen Scoob. It's $20.
No,
it's not $20, I'll watch it.
Seen Scoob either.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
That's another one, yep.
Monster Squad.
Mm-hmm.
The Gate. You think Monster Squad might be a little bit... Nah. It's got some language, right?
Monster Squad's just a little bit... Like, it's not terribly appropriate for the times. Some of the ones come off a little bit... I mean, it's a product of its time. So
it's like, I think it's okay to talk to.
Yeah, it's about
that, probably.
And speaking of Fred Dekker, I would say Night of the Creeps really is pretty safe too. I mean, I'm not talking about like don't show your 3 or 4 year old Night of the Creeps probably, but like as they get a little older, I think that's probably an early one you could show them.
Monster Squad, The Gate, an old 80s movie. Okay, so this one I want your opinion on that It miniseries.
Yeah, that's doable.
Okay.
I watched it when I was a kid. It did mess me up. I will preface it, like, I don't know if it'd screw modern kids up as much because I don't know that it's holds up as good, you know what I mean, as maybe what they're used to now. But
I probably wouldn't show a kid the new It until they were a little older.
If they get scared of Tim Curry as Pennywise, do what my dad did and show me Rocky Horror Picture Show and go, look, that's Pennywise. It's not so scary. And I was like, oh, okay. He's not that scary. You know?
Tim Curry's not a scary man at all. He's a wonderful.
Once my dad did that for me. There you go. A Rocky Horror. That's maybe a little bit older because there's some sexual content in that one, if I remember right. But I mean, that's really kind of gateway horror type stuff too, right?
I would agree. Yeah. I had Tremors. Those old Universal monster movies, I think, are great ones.
Critters.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yep. Yeah. The Addams Family movies a little bit. And then the new Goosebumps, I think, is probably a good one. Will, you got any other?
Yeah, any live action Tim Burton. So Beetlejuice, Edward Scissorhands, that kind of stuff, I think, is pretty palatable for kids.
Even Sleepy Hollow, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's relatively safe. Gosh, what else? I don't know. You can do stuff like
some of the Silver Bullet. I think you said Silver Bullet.
Some of the King, the lighter King stuff is doable. Silver Bullet's a good call, I think. Cat's Eye would be fine. Another one I was thinking of, some of the live action Disney stuff that's kind of creepier. Hocus Pocus, The Witches.
The Witches. Witches kind of screwed with me when I was a kid.
It's kind of spooky, yeah. The Witches, stuff like Neverending Story, Dark Crystal, there's some horror elements in those that I think are pretty pretty gateway that would be safe for kids to see. And it's really about, I'm not just saying this because he's a friend of mine. I really think that Dave is doing it the right way. I think that he's not making determinations based on what he thinks is appropriate or not appropriate. He's letting his kid kind of be the guide, right?
Right.
He's letting his kid, he's not showing him, Cannibal Holocaust, obviously, but he's letting his kid see some of those gateway type things. And if he doesn't seem like it's affecting him or it's like upsetting him or anything, then, and he's still interested in watching more horror stuff, maybe you bump it up a tiny bit. You know, he's doing it the right way. I think he's doing a great job with that.
Yeah, so. It all comes down to the parent, all comes down to the kid.
It does. A lot of times, not too. All kids, yep, are created equal. Not all kids are ready for stuff at the same time. It's just, right. It's just the truth. You know, who knows? Josie, for instance, she'll come down here where we record, and I've got, Jason on the wall. I've got some Michael Myers stuff. And that's creepy stuff. And she'll look at it, and she goes, Jason, yeah. Michael. So she's not scared of it at all. But then I bought her some Ninja Turtles toys, like action figures, and she's terrified of the Shredder toy. She wants nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
She won't even, touch it. So
interesting.
It's weird. It doesn't, I don't know. All kids are different, and all kids have their own quirks. You just got to learn how to pay attention to your kids' reactions to things, I think. And don't show them Cannibal Holocaust. There's a line, I think, at a certain point, right?
I think once they hit 9, you can start showing them some, like...
Cannibal Holocaust?
Some Miike.
Yeah, Takashi Miike. Yeah, they're ready for that. Some Old Boy, maybe. Yeah. I saw stuff probably too early, some stuff, but it was my own fault.
That's the thing is, yeah.
I'd sneak out.
You know what, too? I don't want to give parenting advice because I'm not a parent, but maybe you're a parent, so maybe you could back me up on this. You would rather watch something like that. You would rather watch something that's going to be like that with your kid than have them find it out on their own.
Oh, I'd agree. Yeah. And I think...
But they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, it's true. One thing that my folks used to do that I thought was always smart was if I was interested in watching something... And they took a look at it and went, ew, this looks like it might be rough. They would go, we'll let you watch it after we watch it. So they would watch it.
Yep.
The night we rented it, they would watch it. And then in the morning, I'd get the yay or nay on it.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway.
Very cool. You've been watching, playing, reading anything lately that you want to talk about? Let's talk about some stuff.
Yeah. I have been, I've been watching Haven. The Sci-Fi Channel show.
Okay, how is this? This is Edge and Eric Balfour. Yeah.
Yes, Edge and Eric Balfour, two of the greats. It's funny too because he's credited as WWE superstar Edge.
Right.
Not Adam Copeland.
Well, if I recall, they had a show on Sci-Fi at the time. WWE did. Yes.
Yes, they did. So this is Haven. This is in the King universe. Stephen King universe.
Oh, is it?
Didn't know if you realized that.
I did not. I've never watched the show.
Okay, this is based on the novel. And when I say based on, I mean it's about as tiny a bit like a tether to the original work as you could possibly imagine. On the Colorado Kid, which is a Stephen King book.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, they make some fun King references. They mentioned Derry a few times. They've mentioned Shawshank Prison a few times. Honestly, you could watch the show and know nothing about Stephen King and it wouldn't affect the show. One way or the other, to be honest with you.
Right.
But this show's about an FBI agent who shows up in Haven, Maine to investigate a case that she's working on. And she discovers that Haven, Maine has this thing that happens every 27 years, kind of like Pennywise, called the Troubles. And when the Troubles come, certain powers or curses manifest themselves in the people of Haven. So these curses can, for instance, there's one guy who can feel no physical pain, right? He literally cannot feel physical pain. That's his trouble. There's another person who, when he gets angry, electronics around him start going berserk and doing his bidding. So there's different superpowers and curses and stuff. So she's investing in, it's very villain of the week, very case of the week, with kind of an overarching story throughout the course of the season. I think it's a lot of fun. I was hesitant because I hear, I remember hearing that Sci-Fi Channel shows generally kind of suck.
I've watched quite a few. You gotta meet it halfway a lot of the times. Yeah. Sci-Fi Channel. Yeah. There's some fun stuff on there. Don't be afraid to try Wynonna Earp out.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah. Very comic.
I am more open to it now after having watched some of this. We're at the season 3 finale. There's 5 seasons total of this. So It's a fun show. It reminds me a lot of Buffy and Angel. A lot of Buffy and Angel. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit more geared towards adults than the teen crowd, certainly, in terms of its storytelling, but very, very reminiscent of Buffy and Angel to me. And a little bit less of an ensemble cast than Buffy and Angel had, which is one thing I think this show could use more of, is having some more supporting characters that kind of buoy the show. It's very focused on three characters in particular. So, mm-hmm. But Edge is, he's got a lot more to do.
Is he in it from the start?
He was in season one.
Okay.
I think he's in like two episodes of season one. And then he's in like a few more of season two. And now in season three, he's in like every other episode. So he's like...
He became like a recurring character.
I think he's a regular in four and five. Okay. Season four and five. Like he's full on regular cast. So he plays Dwight. His name is Dwight.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a troubled character. He's got troubles.
What is his trouble?
His trouble is that he is a bullet magnet. Like literally his trouble is if bullets are shot in his direction, they curve and go out of their way to hit him. Yeah, that's his trouble.
What's Eric Balfour's trouble?
Eric Balfour's trouble is that he... This is kind of a spoiler for the show.
Oh,
Eric Balfour's trouble is that he can kill the troubled. But here's what I mean by that. Anybody can kill a troubled person, right? But troubled people, it's you pass it down to your children.
Okay.
So if he kills somebody with a trouble, it kills the curse. So their children won't have the trouble and their children's children won't have the trouble. So that's his power. And when he kills them and their blood contacts his skin, someone troubled, his eyes go silver and he gets like super strength and stuff like that.
Oh.
He gets like a high from...
Interesting.
That's his trouble.
Interesting.
Yep. And then the lead cop is the guy who can't feel pain. He can't feel any sort of physical pain. So, yeah.
Okay.
I enjoy it. It's a fun show. I've really enjoyed it. I think it's quirky. It's got a little bit of that. It's got some romantic tension between your leads, right? Which I enjoy quite a bit. It's fun to watch. Yeah, I like it. I like it. The villain of the weeks tend to be kind of clever and fun. The overarching story doesn't make a ton of sense yet. It's starting to make more sense. It's very Lost, early Lost mystery boxish. The okay. overarching stuff. But I will say that they've done a decent job of keeping me invested. I'm not bored of... I still want to know the answers, right? So we'll see how... satisfactory those answers are. But, yeah. But anyway, so yeah, that is Haven. That's what I've been watching.
So you've been watching.
Oh, and Rock of Love. I've been rewatching VH1's Rock of Love.
Where are you watching this?
This is on Amazon now.
I think I knew that because I think I have a friend who also was rewatching Rock of Love recently.
All three seasons of Rock of Love are now on Amazon Prime. It is... Boy, does it not pass the smell test nowadays.
No. I remember, who won the first one? It was a blonde woman, right?
There's a lot of blonde women on the show.
When she came to Central Michigan University, she went up to the wayside, if anybody has went to the wayside in Central Michigan University. I think we might have one listener that has.
Okay.
Maybe two that have been to the wayside. Maybe three, now that I think about it. Wayside, wonderful place. I'll put it this way. It would not be open now.
Yeah.
I would not have it open now.
Yeah.
But she went up there and I don't know. She did a signing or she like hosted some sort of dance party.
Okay.
It's not a strip club. It's just a club.
Gotcha. Okay. This is a terrible show. It's not good. It was very entertaining when it was first on. I remember watching a lot of it. I feel very uncomfortable watching most of it now.
But I think, you know what? Sometimes I think when you go back and watch some of those old shows and you realize that, it shows how much you've grown, maybe. And it also shows, like, hey, like, you've learned so much now.
Maybe that's it. I haven't laughed as much at it as I was hoping I would be. What's interesting about, though, I'll say this, what threw me off totally, oops, about this, about Rock of Love being on Amazon, is that I'm watching the first episode, right? And... all of a sudden, there are bare breasts. And I was like, this is on VH1. This,
right.
This wasn't... And then I realized that they were all swearing and stuff.
Uncensored.
This is an uncensored version of the show. So, for those of you who...
The gold mine, huh?
Are looking for something exciting to watch. One last thing about Rock of Love.
Yeah, keep going.
They had a challenge... You know, because they do challenges to see who's going to get dates with Brett, right? And it's one of those.
Yes.
Your chuckle there was fucking perfect. It's like a half chuckle.
I remember the show.
Yes. So there's a challenge where they have to, apparently they're testing their skills of surviving on the road with Brett, right? On the tour bus.
On the tour
that
bus,
life,
right.
You know? And of course he has his head of security, Big John, handle all these challenges.
I remember Big John.
Big John?
Yeah,
he's kind of funny. But anyway, the challenge is for them to get into a tiny little porta potty, which, by the way, has clearly been used by human beings, an actual porta potty, and get into like brassieres, get out of their clothes and somehow change into like fancy lingerie that's crotchless inside of, it's so humiliating and embarrassing. And I kind of had to look away for a little bit there. So doesn't pass the test, doesn't hold up so great. But Rockalove, Amazon.
I highly recommend it. You been playing anything lately?
No, I've taken a bit of a break on the games.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit.
Reading? Comic? You've been reading Turtles, right?
Turtles comics, yeah. So I've been cranking through the IDW series, which is the current ongoing Ninja Turtles series. If you have any interest in getting back into that, into Ninja Turtles as a property, I guess, or as a... whatever. I definitely suggest the IDW comics. They're on Amazon. I think they're around like $30 or $35 or so a hardcover. You get a lot of book out of it, and they're really nice hardcovers. It's a very cool version of the Ninja Turtles, so it's worth checking out. Yeah, for sure.
Very
How about
cool.
you, man?
Watch The Invisible Man. I will be quick for fear of spoilers because it is a newer movie. I think this is phenomenal. I think this is a perfect update of a classic story. It updates it for the times and in surprising ways because the marketing is centered around The Invisible Man is kind of being an abusive boyfriend.
That's the vibe I got, was that he was kind of a scummy...
Yes, very yeah. much like a gaslighting is the term, very much like just an abusive creep boyfriend. And he is, but there's a lot more going on to it as well. And I was also worried plot-wise that it was one trailer gave a lot away, but there's a twist in going into the third act that I fully bought, and it's kind of out there, and I don't want to... It was kind of a surprise to me. I remember Juan Al said, the marketing doesn't give away anything in the third act, and he was pretty much right on the money. The Invisible Man they've updated is kind of a supervillain as well, like a comic book supervillain.
Is this going to be part of take two of the Dark Universe?
I hope so. Honestly, I hope.
Do you think they leave it open enough to where you could do something with Invisible Man?
Yes.
Not necessarily the character that they're presenting, but of yeah.
Yes, I think they can continue the story where it leaves off.
Okay.
I'm okay if they don't. I'm also okay with them just making standalone movies for a little bit. Like
Yeah. I think
like Wolfman. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if they want to find a way to spin it into something else down the road, go for it. But yeah. I want the Universal Monsters back, and I want them back like this. I had high expectations and they were all bad. Like I loved this movie. Been watching Buffy. Speaking of things that don't hold up well, for me, Xander on Buffy. I don't like Xander anymore.
Yeah.
He's like super like overprotective and he's...
Yeah, he's kind of an ass.
Of Buffy. He's not even dating her. Like,
yeah.
It's weird. But honestly, the show is... I still enjoy the
show. I like Xander.
I just
don't relate to Xander anymore.
Me neither.
I think at a time there was a time when I did.
I relate to Cordelia and Giles now.
Honestly, those are the two people that remind me most of you, so there you go.
Thank you. And then
I'm mostly Oz.
I can see that. Yeah.
I think I've got some Oz and maybe, I don't know. That's probably about the extent of it. Mostly just Oz.
I find Buffy more interesting now than I used to as well.
She used to almost feel a little bit, and maybe it was just because I was a teenage boy and I maybe I wasn't mature enough fully to like expand my mindset outside of my own gender. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, but I find her to be more interesting now when I watch that show. I find her to feel less of a... She feels like less of a cipher to me. And she feels like more of a fleshed out character. I mean, she's always a fleshed out character. So maybe that was just my... I don't know. I just find her... I find myself more interested in her journey on the show now than I used to.
Yes.
I used to cling to the supporting characters a bit more. So.
No, for sure. I'm actually a little bit more into the Buffy character this time around. And
yeah.
I think part of it is she's just... She's really not, and I'm trying to put this in a nice way, but she's not anything special. And it's kind of a Peter Parker style thing.
No, there's a true humbleness and a true sort of every womanish
right.
quality about the Buffy character that makes her interesting.
Right.
Because oftentimes, and you see it in a lot of, I think that you could say Buffy is kind of a young adult property, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you remind me of something, too. Sorry.
I think oftentimes my trouble with young adult stories, with chosen one type stories, where it's like Harry Potter or Hunger Games, or where you think this person is going to be the, you know, clearly they're the person that's going to wind up, that they were chosen for a reason or whatever, is that those characters in a lot of those properties feel purely defined to me by the fact that they are the chosen one. There's nothing beyond that. There's nothing about their personalities. With Buffy, she is so reluctant and so, I don't even want to say she is kind of disinterested in being that. She does a job,
yep.
But she doesn't want any sort of glory from it. She doesn't want any sort of, you know what I'm saying? There's no, I don't know. You're right. Her every man or every woman type quality is kind of what makes her work for me. So
that reminded me, I have been also reading on Comixology Unlimited. They have a updated version of Buffy. So it's basically Buffy the comic. It's Buffy the first season if it were to take place in 2019. And
whoa.
So like a couple of changes they made. I mean, they updated.
What is this? What is this book?
It's called Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and it's just an updated. So,
so this is like a new reboot, basically.
It would play out like if they were to reboot it now.
Wow.
So what they've done, a couple of the changes they've made, and I like a couple of them. One of them I'm still waiting on. Angel hasn't really showed up, but Spike and Drusilla are in it from the start.
Oh,
they're kind of the big bad early on.
Okay.
Cordelia, they switched around. They made Cordelia a little bit more like she had become later on in the show. Is it Principal Wood in season 7? They've kind of de-aged him and made him a high school love interest for Buffy as well. Willow is out from the beginning, which I think cuts down on some of it. I don't think Oz is showing up.
Oh, she's out. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Sorry. No.
I'm like, they got rid of Willow?
No.
That's how I'm like, you can't do that. Okay.
I'm trying to remember some of the other.
Yeah, I think that's better. Yeah.
There's a twist at the end of the first that I want to start reading the second one with Xander. Xander has been updated in some ways that I think are natural in the age we live in now, but there's a twist at the end of the first book that I'm waiting to see where it goes. But honestly, I kind of dig it.
Or have they updated Xander?
Spoilers for this, if anyway.
Yeah.
They end the first series turning him into a vampire.
Oh!
He gets bitten by, I believe, Drusilla.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's
waiting to
interesting.
I think it's kind of interesting, too, but I'm kind of, I want to see where it goes. I kind of like this. I prefer this to the season 8 comics that
I
read.
Oh, those comics suck, dude.
Yeah.
No, that's not fair. Hold on. I take it back. They did not suck at first. They just went on too damn long, and it was so meandering, and there were too many writers involved. And it felt like there was no, I couldn't get into it. It felt so, the problem for me was season 8, and I understood why they were doing it. The whole idea was like, now we can do things in a season of Buffy because it's a comic book that we could never afford to do on a TV show. And I think that's great in theory, but then it doesn't feel like the TV show anymore.
Right.
Right?
No, there was stuff in those first, even that season 8, that was so, like, Spike was in space.
It was stupid. I'm sorry.
I prefer this. This is much more grounded. This is kind of what I wanted to see. I don't mind reboots like this that are just updating the characters for the now.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool, so.
Yeah, I'm cool with that, too. I am curious to see if we do wind up getting this new Buffy show that's been kind of
kicked around for a while.
Yeah, because at first I think I had heard the plan was full-on remake. They want to go with an African-American lead as Buffy. And I don't know if it was because of fan backlash or because it was misinterpreted. But then I think the showrunner or one of the head writers was like,
oh, that's right.
She's like, no, this is like a Lego sequel type thing.
Right.
Like this is a new Slayer. And I'm debating what I prefer. Almost. I'm not even sure at this
point. There's so much. I almost prefer a straight reboot just because there's so much baggage with the Lego sequel with Buffy.
Kind of,
because
right?
Then you've got to tie up a lot of the loose ends that finale leaves you with, I think, in some ways.
Unless you make it take place a long time later.
Right.
And then maybe things have settled.
Things have settled. Maybe some of what happens is kind of cleared out somehow with just kind
covered
of
up a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what
you could do either way. Yeah. That would be my hold up.
I would like this. I would like Buffy to be back, though.
Me too.
On screen in some form.
Me too.
I think that universe. I don't need it to be Buffy necessarily. I just want I think it'd be very cool if Sarah Michelle Gellar would come back and do something in the world. Because I love Sarah Michelle Gellar, but I don't know what I want from it. I just know that I'd like to. I could use a little.
It's kind of one of those
comfort
things,
food for me. So yeah, I could use that.
It's kind of one of those things where I just like I want it to. It's almost like a Friday the 13th to me, where, or even like a Turtles maybe too, where like I just want something to be out there. Like I want something to exist,
dude. And it's funny because those I think are our comfort food stuff, right?
Right.
Those are the stories that we feel. There's a lot of false nostalgia out there, and a lot of marketed nostalgia and targeted nostalgia out there. And if you're, I'm not gonna ever give anybody shit for being nostalgic about any particular thing. I think it's great if it makes you feel happy and gives you the warm and fuzzies. That's great. But I think nostalgia has been like turned into like a gross thing.
Yeah.
Lately, it feels like to me, or a negative thing, and I understand that, but. I think true nostalgia is that feeling that you get from watching something like, for us, like you were just saying, a Buffy or Friday the 13th, where it's something that is so intrinsically part of you, not just your childhood, part of you and kind of your DNA, that you could care. You would rather a crappy version of it be out there in the universe than have a drought of nothing, right? Like you'd rather you don't. You just want something.
Well, then it's not even so like so. I think the gross part of nostalgia is like when you watch something and you just hate it and you just bitch about it everywhere and you just crap on it all the time. I want something. I would like it to be good. So I want.
Of course.
I want Friday the 13th to exist. I want a new Friday the 13th to exist, and I want it to have kids from today because I want kids of today to feel what I felt when I watched Friday the 13th. Same
Absolutely.
Thing with like Ninja Turtles and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I want kids to enjoy it the way I enjoyed it when I was younger.
That's psyched. They just I don't know, unrelated, but I was pretty jazzed that they announced Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are doing the new Ninja Turtles movie.
I think they'll do an excellent job.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think this has real potential. Because I'm going to guess, I'll take a guess and say those guys were probably fans.
Yeah, I would say so.
and I think that they are, I think they said it's full on animated, which is a little bit of a letdown for me. I was hoping we'd see something live action.
Right.
But that's okay.
Did you want a mix of live action like the last ones?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would like, I think if you could do suits and just use CG to like, clean up the edges and I think if you could use the two working hand in hand, I think you could really do something special with it.
Right.
Unfortunately, it sounds like this is fully animated, which is fine. It's Turtles, so it's all good. But I'm excited because I'm like, by the time this thing comes out, I guess if it ever comes out, hopefully Josie will be old enough. I can go take Josie.
Exactly.
Be kind of cool.
So that's cool. That's where I leave it. I would like a new generation to enjoy Buffy the way I enjoy Buffy.
Yes, that's exactly 100%. Yep.
All right. I'm cool. You cool?
Feel good, man.
All right. Hopefully we answered some questions for you. And I want to just, please, if you have questions or we love feedback like that.
Yeah.
We love to just answer, as you can see by how long this feedback episode is, we love to just.
You guys are basically going to get two full length episodes at this point.
So. We love to just shoot the shit, as they say.
Yes.
So thank you. Where can they send us feedback?
Shoot us an email, horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. If you got something a little longer form if you got a list of questions, go for it. As far as like shorter stuff, we're on Facebook, Horror Movie Yearbook. And we're on Twitter at HM Yearbook. So those are probably the best places to get a hold of us. Oh, we're on Instagram too, but in terms of getting a hold of us with questions and stuff, probably best to go through Twitter or Facebook or email. So please do.
Yes. All right. So send it in. Thank you.